AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com.
Turning and burning, baby. Planting season is back on. There's hope in the air and dust on boots. But the winds of change are blowing on the tax front and on conservation. Seems like a good time to check in with podcasters you need to know. Live from the foothills of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Paul Niefer, the farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen and the host of an exciting new podcast. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Mitchell Hora and Zach Johnson from the Fieldwork Podcast. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. From behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk, I'm your handsome guest host filling in for Chip Flory. Hey, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here filling in for Chip. Loyal listeners, you know, he's got some family stuff he's dealing with this week. So today and tomorrow, he'll be out. We've got some great shows planned for you, including today's. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. And then this afternoon, be sure and tune in. It's a Bubba show. If you've never experienced a Bubba show before, you need to. There's no telling. You know, I know what I want to talk to Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com about, but that doesn't always mean that that's what we talk about. I just kind of am going to open the chute and let him run. Listeners, you know how this goes. Don't miss it. There's bound to be some nuggets in there. Solid gold, baby. Here and there, at least a little bit. This morning, let me see. Let me pull up my markets page here because we've been on rally watch and it sort of turned into corrective action watch over the last couple of days. Yeah. Well, okay. So this has been the story. Nearby corn, May corn up 11. May soybeans up 17, but then look out into the deferreds. July onward in the corn market, on deferred contracts under pressure. Looks like July soybeans out through the sept are at least on the plus side of unchanged, but then lower in the new crop. Meal is mixed. Oil higher on the day. Wheat futures all lower. But hey, you know, it's good for the livestock side. Live cattle futures are up. Looks like feeders are up. Hey, and lean hogs are up pretty moderately, we'll call it, on the lean hog side there. As I said earlier, we're talking with some podcasters. I think you're probably all familiar with these folks. We've got Paul Niefer, the farm CPA, coming up, and he's just starting a brand new podcast, and I'm excited to hear not only what we need to be watching for as far as tax policy and stuff goes, but also what he expects to be talking about in his new podcast. You're going to want to check that one out. And then, of course, Mitchell Hora and Zach Johnson from the Fieldwork Podcast. It'll be great to talk to those two fellas as well as part of our ACAM Farmer Forum. So before we get to all of that, let's talk about today's news. I need to bring up that screen now. Gosh, so many screens. I don't know how Chip keeps it all straight. Here we go. The Fed will end a two-day policy meeting this afternoon with ultra-low interest rates likely still in place to support the economy. Fed officials have noticed in public comments the recent pickups in hiring, in spending, and in inflation, but have signaled no readiness to consider changing key policies. The attention will be on the wording in the post-meeting statement and then on the post-meeting presser with Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. Now, their focus is expected to be on any comments on inflation, as the Fed has held the view that the current rise in inflation is just transitory, here today, gone tomorrow, and it will not be sustained. Meanwhile, U.S. consumer confidence in April jumped to the highest level since the COVID-19 pandemic hit the country in force. People are jubilant and ready to get out and live again outside the confines of their own homes. President Joe Biden will unveil this evening a $1.8 trillion American Families Plan in his first address to a joint session of Congress. Now, among the provisions are free universal preschool for all 3- and 4-year-olds, 2 years of free community college for all Americans, increased investment in childcare to ensure that childcare costs to low- and middle-income families are no more than 7% of their income, improve the quality of care, and offer a $15 minimum wage for all early childhood staff. It also includes creation of a national comprehensive paid family and medical leave program, providing workers up to $4,000 a month for 12 weeks of paid parental, family, and or personal leave. That's among many other provisions. Now, Biden would also adjust how capital gains are taxed at death. Unrealized gains would be treated as sold and taxable with an exemption of $1 million per person, besides the existing exclusion of up to $500,000 for a married couple's primary residence. Now, under current law, heirs only owe capital gains taxes on gains after the original owner's death, and only when they sell. We'll see what Paul Niefer makes of this situation later on this morning. Stick around. Biden's plan relies on $700 billion in revenue from the IRS that the administration says would come from a significant expansion of the Internal Revenue Service that would double its enforcement staffing over a decade and require banks to provide the government with more info about money coming into and out of individuals' and businesses' accounts. Again, let's talk to Paul about this. No looming shortage of crude oil or gasoline, but tanker truck drivers needed to deliver the gas to the stations who are in short supply is becoming a problem. According to the National Tank Truck Carriers, the industry's trade group, somewhere between 20 and 25% of tanker trucks in the fleet are parked heading into the summer due to a shortage of qualified drivers. Experts warn of the potential for gasoline shortages at local filling stations. And the latest census number from the Financial Times report likely show that China's population will decline, for the first time since 1949. The Financial Times signals the decline in the world's most populous country will likely drop its count to under 1.4 billion, but it's unclear how much less. That could have major repercussions for the Chinese economy as it recovers from the pandemic, as well as how its own citizens perceive China. Now let's bring in Margie Echocamp from The Scoop. Good morning, Margie. How are you today?
Hey, Davis. Doing well.
That's outstanding. I was just talking about the potential for a gasoline shortage because of a lack of drivers to transport the fuel to the local filling stations. But you brought chemical shortages to my attention this morning. What you got?
Yeah, so this is an issue that we've been covering now as a team for over a week, and we are seeing some notable shortages in the overall supply chain when it comes to crop protection chemicals. Now, as one manufacturer referred to this as, you know, the first pinch is going to be in herbicides, mainly because of the volume of those materials, as well as they are the first application for the growing season. But we are going to see some issues in supplies with fungicides and insecticides as well, is something that I've learned as I've talked to multiple manufacturers. And, you know, this is coming as a really building issue because there's multiple obstacles in the supply chain that we've missed here. So we have a shortage of containers for overseas shipments. We have issues at port backlogs. We also have some issues with trucking here once the product gets stateside. And so much of the active ingredients are manufactured overseas, but also some are formulated there, some are formulated here in the States. And so manufacturers have really been trying to shift where they're pulling products from and how they're getting products to those areas of most demand.
Sounds like top to bottom, all up and down the supply chain from production to transport, we've got problems with chemical shortages. Margie Echocamp, we'll expect you to keep an eye on this for us. What do you say?
Absolutely. Thank you, Davis.
Margie Echocamp from The Scoop. When we come back here on AgriTalk, Paul Niefer, the farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen, we're going to talk tax policy and what it might mean for you, your operation, and your heirs. That's coming up next right here on AgriTalk. Don't go away.
You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. They are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Hey.
Oh. Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Is everybody boogieing along with me out there? Love that, Justin Timberlake.
Didn't we
Davis
just have
Michelson,
him
your pal. We did just have him yesterday.
Right. Well,
is there a such thing as too much Timberlake?
The computer loves him
probably.
Too.
Probably, though. There might be such a thing as too much. I might have overstated it. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis Michelson, your pal here, in for Chip. He'll be back later on this week. Actually, just in time for Friday's roundtable discussion with the usual suspects. You're not going to want to miss that. We may or may not have a very exciting guest that I can't really talk about right now. Joe would take me off the air immediately if I said who it was. But if we get him, it's going to be awesome. So come on around for Friday morning's show. Right now, I've got Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen, the farm CPA. Paul, good morning. Thank you for joining us on AgriTalk, buddy.
Hey, I don't know what your weather's looking like, but we're supposed to be almost 90 degrees tomorrow. So
90 degrees. Now that's taking it too far, isn't it? Isn't that taking it too far?
It is, because we really have had hardly any measurable rain for 2 months or almost 3 months now. So our crops are definitely looking a little peaked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are you clear out in Washington? Have I got that right?
I am in, southeastern Washington. People have heard of the Palouse country, and I'm right on the edge of the Palouse country. So, although I think I'm going to get back to normal and be on the road about 135 days a year. So, that's the plan.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's start with your new podcast titled The Farm CPA Podcast. You, of course, being the farm CPA. Just give us a broad overview. What do you expect to talk about? What do you hope to achieve here? And what kind of information can we expect?
Yeah, I think that the goal of the podcast is we're going to have conversations mostly with farmers, but we'll have, for example, I have a conversation with Jim Wiesmeyer that will be one of the podcasts, but most of the conversations will be with farmers. And it's designed to allow the farmer to share their story. Share what they did right, maybe what they did wrong, and do a little bit deeper dive. You know, a lot of these are probably top producer farmers that have been in the magazine, but this allows the farmer really to provide a little bit more knowledge. And it isn't just farmers that are top producers. It'll be any farmers that have a story to tell. So that's really the goal of the podcast, is to get those stories out there to other farmers that can help them too.
Well, that sounds great, because if there's one thing that I've learned, it's that I tend to make mistakes. And sometimes recovering from those mistakes, from those missteps, those miscalculations along the way can be of benefit to others who can say, geez, I don't want to wind up like that guy did and have to backtrack all that stuff. And so perhaps talking to farmers who have walked this road a while longer than others would be extremely beneficial.
Yeah. And I know in my career, I learn more from my mistakes than I do from my successes. Right. And I think a lot of times when you have too many successes, that actually leads to a big failure later on, because you actually probably get a little cocky at times. And that's usually when something bad happens. So I think it'll be a good podcast. It's designed to be about a 30-minute, maybe 45-minute conversation, so it's easy to listen to.
Outstanding. Well, and I understand you've got the first episode in the can. Now, we here at AgriTalk, we're going to post Paul's first episode on the AgriTalk Facebook page. You can find it on Twitter. I think Big Apple Joe is going to tweet that out, and you can also find it on agweb.com, and there'll be more details to follow. So, having said that, here, I read this in the news earlier. I'm hoping you can speak to this. Biden's plan relies on a $700 billion in revenue from the IRS. a significant expansion of the IRS's enforcement staffing over the next decade and require banks to provide the government with more info about money coming into and out of individuals and businesses' accounts. At first blush, you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. You know, I'm concerned. Does that mean every time you have a deposit going to the account, there's going to be a 1099 that the bank has to send to the IRS, and the IRS automatically assumes it's income unless you prove otherwise? You know, that's a big concern. There's certainly four or five major provisions in there for farmers that are negative. You know, one of those provisions is basically the step back. You know, we had a discussion on the step back about a month ago. I think almost everything in the step back is going to be in Biden's proposal. They only spend about two sentences talking about it, but reading between the lines, I think it's basically the step back. Another thing, I thought they would be proposing that you're going to owe FICA tax if your income is above $400,000. They've actually changed it to saying the net investment income tax, that's that 3.8% tax. And I predicted this about 5 years ago when the net investment income tax became effective. I said at some point they're going to make this tax effective for all income. And it sounds like if farmers are either a Schedule F farmer, well, that applies right now. But if they're a S corporation or a limited liability company, sort of taxes an S corporation, that all your income above $400,000 is going to be subject to the extra 3.8% tax, plus your top rate is now going to be at 39.6%. Mm-hmm. The excess business loss rules are going to be effective for people. And another thing that's really going to affect farmers is those that like to trade farmland. If your gain is greater than $500,000, that's going to become taxable. So those are some of the major provisions that are in there that are going to definitely negatively impact farmers. Now, younger farmers and farmers with kids, you know, they're probably going to have some benefits. You know, the child tax provisions, the child care provisions, quote, free preschool, free community college for the first 2 years. Now, when you say free, you know, some of us are going to have to pay for it. But
yeah, there's no such thing as free, right?
free just, it's a wealth transfer. I mean, that's exactly what we're discussing right now. There's a major discussion on a wealth transfer from wealthier people to people that aren't as wealthy, you know, and to some degree, you know, they're buying votes. We already know that, but that's been true throughout, you know, 250 years of history of the U.S. So, you know, that's not going to change.
Well, if we're talking about eliminating that step up in basis, when we're talking about this increased tax burden on farm country, if we need to refigure how we look at succession planning, Paul, at least that's how I read it. Do you have any thoughts on that? I know it's too soon because we really don't have any details on the specific policies themselves, but can you just sort of start to soften us up a little bit? Where should we be thinking?
I think our mindset, if these get implemented and if they last long enough, that's the other thing. These may not last that long if we get a new administration, new Congress. But let's assume that we do have the step back that gets implemented or something similar. Our mindset of waiting for transfer of assets till death because we knew we'd get the step up in basis, that's probably going to flip around to, well, we're going to transfer assets during lifetime to get that appreciation out of the estate. Right. And, you know, we don't care about the step up. And now, and also that's a misnomer. There's still going to be a step up, but in order to get the step up, the person that's transferring the asset has to pay a tax. So they keep saying we're going to eliminate the step up in basis. Well, no, they're going to keep the step up in basis, but in return, whoever transferred that asset either during lifetime or at death is going to owe a tax. So, you know, under the current rules, we get the step up and no tax. Under the new rules, we get a step up with a tax. So that's really, you know, the key difference there, which is not what I like because that's an immediate tax.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of us who don't own a farming operation, would that include my own residential home within city limits here?
That is an exemption. There's an exemption that says if you sell your personal residence and you're a married couple, the gain is less than $500,000, then that would be exempted. So they have that in there. The wording was a little quirky, but right. what it's essentially saying is I, as the husband, can give $1 million and we don't have to worry about that tax. My spouse can give $1 million. We don't have to worry about the tax. Plus, we can own a home that's got a $500,000 appreciation if it's that high, and we won't owe the tax there. So that's how they're wording it.
Taxing the wealthy, more taxes to give away free stuff to the non-wealthy. What could possibly go wrong, Paul?
Well, yeah, luckily I'm not a politician, so I'm gonna let the politicians deal with that issue. And again, not all of this will go through, but this is not a normal year. This is a pandemic year, and a lot of this is going to get pushed through probably.
Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen. Look for the Farm CPA podcast. Go over to agweb.com. You can find it there. Come right on back with more. Davis Michelson here on AgriTalk.
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. Mr. Wilson, I'm seeing some strength in the May contracts in both the corn and the soybeans, but then we fall off the further out we go. What's the deal?
No, it's been a volatile session after yesterday's roller coaster ride and all the grain markets. The story is the May expirations are, first notice day for the May contract is Friday. So those contracts are leading on the upside. So the bull spreads are working. You got the May-July spread gaining another 12 cents today. It's out to 53 cents premium May to July corn futures. And then on the May-July soybean futures, that's up another 12 cents today to 42 cents. The corn market is the July corn market is up about 30 cents from its overnight session lows after reversing yesterday. And then the July beans are up about 40 cents from their overnight lows. So we did find some buying on the downdraft, and now we're just going to see how we finish out the week. The markets are definitely loaded with some long positions that just needed to get paired before we got into the end of the month on Friday. I think one thing that's keeping underlying support in here is that you have both Goldman Sachs and the UBS group talking about there's plenty of room to run in commodities, and I think that's helping to bring in some fresh speculative money to these markets on the break we had overnight.
All right, very good. Well, and we've got some strength in the livestock markets as well. Live cattle nearby is up anyway. Feeder cattle, same situation, and lean hogs are rooting higher. Jeff Wilson, Senior Market Analyst with Pro Farmer. Hey, go to tryprofarmer.com to get more from the gang over there. Stick around. We'll have our Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal Davis Michelson behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chip's stead. He will be back later on this week. If you know what's going on with his family, it's, you know, he's fine. They're handling it just fine. But let's all remember him and his family and friends in our thoughts and prayers as we move forward through this week. But he'll be back. He'll be back. Right now, let's start our Farmer Forum brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. That's ACAM. Sponsors include American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, the National Corn Growers Association, the National Pork Board, and Sanderson Farms, among other. For more info, www.agweb.com/ACAM. Mitchell Hora and Zach Johnson, the hosts of the Fieldwork Podcast, and farmers themselves join us now. Zach, let's start with you. How are you doing this morning, buddy boy?
I am good, Davis. How are you?
Outstanding, sir. Now, you've got boots in the dirt yourself. Talk to us about what your day-to-day has been like the last couple of days.
Well, today's the first day we've seen the sunshine since what feels like Thanksgiving, but it's been gloomy and cold here. Not enough rain the last week, really, to make a big difference other than keeping the soil wet. But I think later today with the sunshine, highs being in the mid-50s to upper 50s, I think there's going to be a lot of scratching in the fields going on, and we'll probably see a lot of planters rolling later tomorrow and Friday.
And you're located generally where, remind our listeners?
We're in west central Minnesota, so we're not too far from Alexandria.
Okay, very good. West central Minnesota, I'm making a note of that. Mitchell Hora also joins us. Mitchell, good morning. How are you?
We are keeping after it down in Washington, Iowa, southeast Iowa. All kinds of things going on. Soil sampling and going to plant some beans here today.
Outstanding. Okay. So are you noticing as you look around? I mean, as I'm looking out my window here and making little trips back and forth here and there, there's an awful lot of activity out in the fields right now, and the farmers feel like the dirt's working pretty good. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, that's exactly it for sure. Everybody seems to be out in the fields here in southeast Iowa. A little bit of spotty rain here today, so we'll see if that's going to slow us up, but until it stops us, we're going to keep full speed ahead.
Okay. Now, there was talk of a quick start, and I imagine Zach, you folks up in your area probably didn't get to take advantage of that early window, but Mitchell, I'm wondering if down there in southeastern Iowa, because here in my backyard, we had about a week of decent weather, and some of the early guys got out there super fast, and then it got too cold to do anything, and we just sort of ground to a halt. So we had a bit of a break there in between, but now we're back at it. Did the same thing happen down there in southern Iowa?
No, not necessarily. We had a couple guys that got a little bit going early. You know, some of my guys that like to get started really early, but really nothing started taking off until last week. So we were just really wet. We got a couple of those rains there a couple weeks ago. I think at our farm we had about 3.5 inches of rain. It would have been maybe 2.5, 3 weeks ago now. And so that really slowed everything up. But now everyone's rolling, and soil moisture, soil temperature is really great.
Zach, up there in Minnesota, you're saying that you haven't quite gotten the same start that Mitchell has down there or people in my area. Are you concerned right now? What might the top three on your concerns list be right now for getting the crop in the ground?
No, I'm not concerned about the weather. Our soils are still really cold. I would say we've got probably 1% of the corn crop in our county right now. We actually put 100 acres in ourselves on Thursday. Thursday it was dry enough to go. We went that day, got everything moving, just made sure, you know, got all the first day stuff done with the planter, all those infield changes that you make on the first day. But most people haven't put anything in the ground yet. As I say, the soil's cold. It hasn't been, I don't think we've been over 45 degrees in a couple of weeks, but the forecast right now looks pretty good. You know, we're behind where we were last year, but overall average, we're not behind yet. So I really, looking at the forecast, I'm not concerned at all with the weather right now.
Okay, very good. There is talk of a warmer, dry trend this summer. At least that's been the pervasive view of some of the weather forecasters. Are either of you overly concerned with that or doing anything to try and get out in front of it?
So for us, we're using... Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I was just going to say, up where I'm at, usually warm and dry is good for us. We were definitely too dry last summer. We have had some enough rains lately to kind of replenish that this spring. But I guess, again, it's something that I'm not concerned about at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mitchell?
And for us, we're planting everything green. So we were planting corn yesterday and cereal rye and hairy vetch that was, probably 15 inches tall or so, maybe getting close to 20 inches tall. We'll terminate that here this weekend. And we're planting beans today and cereal rye that's knee high. We won't terminate that until it does get hot and dry. Like I said, we got ample soil moisture right now. When things do get dry, we'll terminate that cover crop and seal in the rest of that moisture and protect against evaporation. Doing that, we found that we can really withstand those hot, dry summers and utilize these spring rains that we're getting here now.
You were pretty enthusiastic in an email back and forth here just over the last few days about the amount of cover crops that you're seeing in your area. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I mean, so Washington County is a really interesting place where we've got a lot of cover crop, a lot of guys planting into cover crop here, and we've had some pretty nice conditions for that cover crop to really grow. And also with solid snow cover for pretty much the entire winter, the cover crop overwintered really, really well, and I'm seeing a good diversity of cover crops as well. Just a tool that a lot of farmers, you know, in Iowa are continuing to adopt. Getting, you know, sounds like we're getting close to 2 million acres of cover crops in Iowa now. So a practice that I think more and more farmers are seeing can really work to provide a variety of different benefits. So exciting to see it take off here and continue to grow outwards from Washington County.
Well, I want to come back to that, Mitchell. But Zach, I got to ask you, since you're not quite rolling, there had been some talk of some supply shortages and, of course, the skyrocketing cost of inputs. I wonder, what's your view on those? Have you seen any supply shortages on the fertilizer side or on the chemical side? And what do prices for fertilizer look like in your area?
We've got all of our fertilizer down, or at least the majority of it we put down last fall. So personally, we're in good shape. I know there's a lot of anhydrous tanks running. The urea's been going on here, or I expect it'll pick up and really start going on here in the next couple of days. I haven't heard of supply shortages yet in my area on the fertilizer side of things, or on the chemical side of things, really. But there again, we have all of our chemicals already here. They got delivered maybe a month ago. So we don't have any specific shortages on our farm, and I really haven't heard of people mentioning the shortages on any of those direct inputs. I have heard of some shortages when it comes to getting parts from some of the local dealers. Things like field cultivator sweeps, I've heard, are pretty well completely impossible to come by.
Mitchell Hora, I'm going to throw the same question at you. What's your experience down there?
So I haven't seen anything, you know, running short right now. Same as Zach, we've got the chemicals sitting in the barn right now. We'll start spraying here this weekend. But we're just cutting back on stuff so much in terms of our synthetic inputs and our pesticide use that for us, you know, we're not utilizing that much of those inputs anyway, and buying the little bit that we need early enough that we're able to just have our ducks in a row, ensure that we're protecting, you know, and getting the tools when we need them, when the price is right. And hopefully those supplies will be around and we can get some of these issues figured out, though, at large, because I know we're in a spot where, you know, for Zach and myself, that we're fortunate that we do have the tools that we need. And I know that's definitely not the case for other farmers around the country.
For sure. Now, Zach, when you talk about having trouble getting replacement parts for implements and such, we were on the risk of planting southern Minnesota just held together by fishing wire, duct tape, and hope. What's the solution there?
You know, that's a good question. I honestly don't know. Again, we're in a position where our stuff is good to go. We're ready to roll. I think most guys are, but you certainly have heard, at least we have around here, a lot of talk about there being shortages on everything. But, you know, everybody that I know is pretty well ready to go. As far as a solution, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know that anybody does.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm fearful that the parts shortage and just general shortages are going to probably plague us throughout the rest of the summer. Mitchell, when you're talking about you're reducing your synthetic inputs and stuff, can you just briefly touch on what you mean by that and what are your solutions?
Yeah, so I mean, this weekend here for the, like, our corn soybean our corn herbicide program, we'll hit the cover crop with a Roundup and atrazine blend here this weekend, maybe some Corvus in that, and then we'll come back with a post pass in another 6 weeks or so and hit it with just Roundup, no residuals at that time. And then on the soybeans, we'll be one pass of Roundup around the 1st of June when that cover crop is heading out, and that's it. So we're really very been good. Able to cut back on that. And
that's
fine too.
Yep. Mitchell Hoare and Zach Johnson from the Fieldwork Podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Washington County project just a little bit more right here on AgriTalk. Stick around. There's more to go.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Little Nickelback as we all take a moment to think about Chip. All right, that's enough. Davis Michelson back here on AgriTalk. Thanks for joining us. One more segment to go. I've got the hosts of the Fieldwork Podcast, Mitchell Hoare and Zach Johnson. Zach, let me open it up to you for an absolute shameless plug. Talk to me about the Fieldwork Podcast. What are you trying to accomplish and where can we find it?
Well, the whole thing that we say with it is that it's a podcast that is by farmers and for farmers. And what we really do is try to dig down to the nitty gritty and talk about different conservation practices, different management techniques on the farm and how that affects, you know, our natural resources, our soil health, our water quality. What can we do to make the difference and always try to progress forward? Because, you know, farmers do a dang good job. We have a pretty good idea what we're doing, but it always pays to try to continue moving the needle forward and continue trying to be better. So that is the entire idea behind the show.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I find that wherever I find my favorite podcasts?
You can go to fieldworktalk.org, and we are on all the usual platforms as well.
Very good. Very good. That's the Fieldwork Podcast with Mitchell Hoare and Zach Johnson. In fact, both my guests this morning. Mitchell, I want to hear a little bit about the Washington County project, something that you're involved in down there in Southeast Iowa. What is the Washington County project and what do you hope to achieve?
Yeah. So, you know, Zach and I are in our third season here now with the podcast. We've really talked at a high level about things like cover crops and reducing tillage and such. But Washington County is an interesting place where there's a lot of farmers here that have been using no-till for 40, 50 years. There's people that have been using cover crops for more than 20 years. And we wanted to really highlight that. And, you know, it's just unique that this is the area that I'm from. And, you know a lot of the farmers down here and have been able to learn from them and implement on our own farm along with them. So we did a special project, a couple different segments, looking back at how do you create a conservation culture and how do we continue to build upon that as we look to the future of sustainable ag.
Zach, Mitchell's pretty excited about the amount of cover cropping and conservation practices in play down in his area. Are you seeing the same level of adoption up there in southern Minnesota?
No. Well, we're in west central Minnesota, but I would say that around here we are at least 95% conventional tillage. There's a few guys that do practice no-till, especially for their soybeans, that leave the corn residue out there, or maybe they'll leave the soybean residue out in the fall and then till it in the spring. Very, very little cover crop. There's some guys starting to try it, especially if you get about 10 or 15 miles east of me, where they've got irrigated ground, so the soil is a little more coarse, and they grow some short season stuff like contracted peas over there. Those guys are starting to work with cover crops a lot. We've got about 30 acres of cover crops this year that we spread onto a hill last fall. It's one of our driest pieces, and we get a lot of wind erosion on it, so we did put some rye out there. Unfortunately, it got a little bit late, so we didn't get much growth last fall. But these last couple of days now, I was out there over the weekend looking at it, and it's up 2 or 3 inches tall. So I'm excited to see what that ends up looking like. And the idea is going to be to plant green right through that the way Mitchell is doing.
So in your area, when you talk about maybe not quite as much adoption of these conservation geared practices, is it a question of agronomics or ideology that's holding people back?
I mean, I think it might be a little bit of both. The agronomics are difficult. You know, it's sure. It's a lot cooler up here. We're on the northern stretch of the Corn Belt here. We're not as dry as they are out on the other side of the Dakotas. We get a fair amount of rain. We're not in the Red River Valley, but we're not that far from it. We've got very, very black, sticky, high clay, high calcium, high magnesium soils. And I know that it's a huge advantage to open those soils up in the fall and get that sun to heat it up and get the temperature in there and get it to dry out. And I think that's the number one thing that we're sure. concentrated on when we till it.
Sure, sure. Mitchell, I'm going to drop a hand grenade in your lap, and Zach, feel free to to jump in on this as well. But when we're talking conservation practices, you know, as long as the agronomics line up, it's been my experience anyway, farmers are pretty much all for it. But it just seems like the green movement can get awful preachy from their urban apartments and office buildings. Is there a risk that urbanites defining what conservation is and what it should look like, does that run the risk of turning farmers off to the whole idea?
It 100% does. That's why we really need to ensure that this movement is not driven by regulations. It's not driven by one-size-fits-all measures, but it allows farmers to be innovative. It allows for them to just better understand what it means to improve our impact on water quality and sequester carbon or improve the nutrient density of our food. I mean, that's the goal at the end of the day. It's just to continue to preserve the resources, protect what makes American farming great, which is, you know, our soils. And so I think it's just a better understanding that there's no one size fits all. We really, you know, I like that we highlight that on the podcast and in some of our efforts here, like with our video about Washington County, there's no one size fits all. And we need to make sure that we are talking with our legislators. We need to ensure that we're communicating with them. There's some movement on that front in Des Moines and in Washington, D.C., and we all need to be a part and continue to improve on a year-to-year basis.
And Zach, I know we're preaching to the choir on this, but if you don't take care of your soil won't take care of you. That's one of the basics, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I like to remind people of is, you know, when you talk about farmers out here and the management practices that we use, there's nobody out there who has more of an interest in doing the right thing than farmers, because that is our livelihood. If we don't take care of the natural resources in our own backyards, that affects us and our families first before anybody else is affected.
Mitchell Hora, Zach Johnson, thank you so much. Mitchell, just a quick closing thought from you. Anything else to say?
Nah, everyone check out the podcast and check out our new video on our website as well.
Zach Johnson, the last word is yours, baby. Go.
It, like Mitchell said, check out Fieldwork or fieldworktalk.org. You can find it everywhere, and I hope everybody has a fantastic and safe spring planting season.
Mitchell Hora and Zach Johnson, thanks for joining us today. That was the Farmer Forum, brought to you by Americans Conservation Ag Movement. Sponsors include SimPass, The Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum, Checkoff, Valent USA, Farm Journal Foundation, and Trust in Food. That's a Farm Journal initiative. Agweb.com/ACAM. This afternoon, I've got Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. Do not miss this show. No telling what's going to happen.